You're listening to Well Met.
Well Met.
A Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Well Met Podcast. We're a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. And once again, it's the wrong voice talking first this week. John is still away at TwitchCon, so you're just stuck with me walking you through the grand old world of Hearthstone here. It's October 2nd, Sunday, October 2nd, and we are on episode number 80. So I'm up in Saskatoon, and joining me as per usual is my good friend from Kansas City, Mr. J.R. Cook. How you doing, J.R.?
Hey, Kevin. Another good week to be here. I'm sad to see that John is still not here, but I saw that he has been enjoying himself out there at TwitchCon. Did you get a chance to catch their panel? It was streamed, which I didn't know about until that day. I thought him and Jimmy and the other two non-BlizzPro people did an excellent job of just kind of showing how to run podcasts on Twitch. And if you want to check that out, I believe there are VODs out there for it. I really enjoyed the panel.
Yeah, I tuned in for as much of it as I could. I did notice there was a bit of a tech issue on the stream where John's microphone was hooked up to the stereo system in their auditorium, right, but not to the stream. So it was a little tough to make out some of the things he was saying on stream. But on the whole, they did a phenomenal job. The presentation was excellent. I thought it was a lot of fun. And I think they made a lot of good points about how important it can be to even a produced show like a podcast to have that live interaction and community and ability for people to tune in and kind of see the making of and how the sausage is made, right? Like, they did a really phenomenal job. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really enjoyed it. If you haven't yet, and you are interested in anything like Twitch related or doing podcasts or anything like that, I recommend definitely check it out. But anyway, Kevin, how has your week been this week with Hearthstone or in general?
Not bad. I didn't get to play as much as I would have liked, in large part because I have had the craziest couple of weeks from work. And honestly, after I hit Legend for September, I sort of put the game down and had to refocus on some other things. I've been cranking out a ton of freelance work. Some of those pieces have published, more are still to come. I've been starting to get serious about making plans for BlizzCon, trying to make sure that I've got, you know, the dinners booked, my accommodations and travel all figured out. I've been starting to watch some old Hearthstone casting stuff, my own and other people's, to try and prep and get a little bit ready for my casting gig, the TESPA thing coming up right after BlizzCon. And all that stuff put together meant that, like, I've been trying to just clear out my quests, and that's about as much Hearthstone as I've been able to play, unfortunately. What about you?
Unfortunately, I'm in the same boat. I wanted to hit Legend like so bad with my Warlock deck this past week, and I thought I was going to do it. I did. I did top out at rank 1 before I fell down to rank 3, and unfortunately, I just didn't have enough time. Like, I was working like super late all week, working on this project at work that's going to keep me busy from here until BlizzCon. So then I've got some BlizzPro stuff on the side that I'm working on as well, that hopefully people will be seeing sometime in the next couple weeks as we are working on redesigning the websites before BlizzCon happens. So I'm working on some of that. And then, of course, just BlizzCon in general, just preparing for it. Like, I just got my flight information stuff in my email today, and I'm just like, oh man, we're just a month away. We're less than a month away.
I know, it's crazy. Like, I have to prep all this stuff. I'm trying to make sure that I have all of my regular BlizzCon things ready, all the stuff for Calm Before the Storm, which John and I are both participating in, ready again, that I've put together all the Well Met stuff that we're going to bring down. Dinners are booked. It's crazy, man, and it's going to be a nuts thing. I'm there this year, I think, for like 9 days, and every day is just packed.
Yeah, I'm out there for a full week, and definitely, if you guys want to come check us out at BlizzCon, I know Kevin and John We'll be doing the Con Before the Storm stuff Thursday. I'll let him give you more information on that. But I also know that we're planning on doing some kind of gathering, like a Blizz Pro gathering Friday evening, either during the contest or shortly after. I'll have more details on that, hopefully next week. But it's just a small little meet and greet, probably right in front of the convention center or something like that. If you want to come hang out with the three of us, well met. If you want to check out the guys from Heroes Power Hour, if you want to meet the guys from West March Workshop, or these guys and Jimmy, and I don't know if Rosh was going or not, but them from the Payload Podcast, as well as other people that write there at Blizz Pro. So we're going to try to get something set up for that, just something very casual and just a small little meet and greet if you want to do that. Kevin, what about the details of your panel that you and John are doing?
Well, so John and I are actually on two different ones this year. It's a little bit of a mix up from last year. So I'm going to be on the Hearthstone panel Thursday night from 5:30 to 6:30 with Garrett from the Angry Chicken, as well as Chris Chan from Value Town, and some of the other hosts from Happy Hearthstone and Legend of the Innkeeper. John is going to actually moderate the Overwatch panel along with people from The Guardians, Overcast, and The Cavalry, as well as our Payload co-host Rosh. So it's going to be a full night. They're not on until 8:30, but it's going to be a whole bunch of great stuff. Basically, there's a panel for every Blizzard game, and there's going to be appearances by people from major podcasts from every single one of them, and I'm really looking forward to it, because in addition to obviously the Blizz Pro people who will be there, Scott Johnson is going to moderate the Heroes of the Storm panel. There's going to be some cool people in the WoW segment coming up, kind of falls right before John's segment goes on, and it's a whole evening thing, right? Like, it's going to run from 5:30 pretty much straight through till 11. It's going to be a great night, lots of cool content. If you're not able to come to the event, I know that they're probably going to try and record it. Last year we tried to live stream it, it didn't go super hot, but in general, for sure, you should check it out, whether it's live and you're there or you want to check out the content later on.
Yeah, so a couple other things real quick before we get into the Hearthstone stuff. Some other stuff that I've been working on. I want to put out a recommendation, because my wife and I went out and bought this game on the PlayStation 4 this week. It's a fun little co-op game. Me and her played the heck out of it, ended up beating it. We probably played 8 hours in the last 2 days on this game, and it's Overcooked is the name of it. It only costs like $11 on PlayStation 4. I think you can get it on the Xbox One. I think it's also available on the PC. But it's a fun little cooperative game. It definitely has a very high recommendation from both of us. We really enjoyed playing that. And the other thing that I'm working on is I'm starting up a tech blog. So if you like, if you're interested in like C# .NET coding stuff, go check me out on Medium.com. I'm posting there under the name Eldorian. What I'm hoping to do is in the next year, I'm going to be writing more of that and also speaking at other developer events. So it's something I'm really pushing for in the next year. So if you're interested in geeky stuff like that, check it out. Otherwise, it's probably going to bore you if you're not interested.
Well, I mean, we are a Hearthstone podcast, so there's probably a handful of geeky people out there who tune in and check this stuff out. But speaking of Hearthstone, there might have been a couple of things we have to talk about this week, hey?
Oh, yeah. There's
one or two.
Pretty big news.
One or two. All right. Let's jump into the news.
This week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
So we have a whole pile of stuff we've got to go through this week. Before we do that, we do want to take a moment to thank our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, and Coral. The three of you have been enormous supporters of Well Met for a very long time. I was actually looking at some of the records, and we've got people now who have been financially backing Well Met for over a year, which blows my mind. So to all of you out there, especially to our friends of the show, thank you so much. If you want to learn more about what that entails, you can head over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast.
And one of the tiers is you get some coaching. I think this week I'm doing some coaching with one of our patrons, this one. So, you know, if that's something you want to do, definitely check it out. And you can hang out with us for about an hour and learn all the things you probably don't want to do in Hearthstone. At least if I'm the one coaching. If you get the other two, it's probably fine.
Ha, there you go. I've done a couple of coaching segments, and it's a lot of fun. Like, it's cool to just sit, talk through plays, talk to people about their love for the game, their experience with the show. It's a good time. So number one on this week's news item list, we did finally find out what the upcoming promotion for Turand Whisperwind was. So as of this weekend at TwitchCon, there was an announcement made based on the Amazon buyout of Twitch a couple years back. They've actually flattened Twitch Turbo and a lot of the Twitch features for members into Amazon Prime. They're calling it Twitch Prime on the Twitch side. So if you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, or you maybe are an old school Twitch user that has Twitch Turbo, those things can all now be wrapped up into one single membership, and anyone who does that can click a little button over at Twitch Prime to link their accounts up and get promotional codes for a whole bunch of games and content. One of them is Turand Whisperwind in Hearthstone. So I know for myself and a whole bunch of other people that I've talked to, I don't have Amazon Prime because I'm in Canada and there's not a lot of use for it up here, unfortunately. But I did set up the trial membership and make sure I did everything, change all my regions, linked it all up, was able to get the code and get it unlocked in the game. JR, I know you had some thoughts on this, though.
Yeah, no. If you're already an Amazon Prime member, I mean, this is awesome because you get it for basically free. And not only do you get it for free, you get, ad-free Twitch, which is pretty cool to begin with. You get a credit that if you subscribe to a channel, it's a free subscribe. So whoever you subscribe to will get that money. And if you're already an Amazon Prime member, you should just go ahead and hook this up. And then if you do, I would ask you if you'd please consider sending that channel subscribe over to twitch.tv/blizzpro. And we're just like five away from getting two more emoticons. If we just hit that five, I don't care if we get more than that. I just want to hit that five because I need two more emoticons because we need a Jar Jar one for 9 ball over at Westmarch Workshop.
Ha, nice. Yeah, the community response to this has been, I think, pretty good. I know there's a lot of people who are mad because Amazon Prime isn't available in their region. Right. You can do some looking around online. Lots of people have posted ways for you to do this and set it up. As long as you can post a valid address from any of the eligible countries, you can set up a demo account and away you go. You have to have a credit card, I think, is basically the biggest barrier to entry, but you don't have to pay for anything. You can set up a free trial and immediately cancel it. I think it's cool. I think Turand actually looks super good in game. I'm really actually quite impressed with how this all came together.
And if you do live in one of those countries and you don't have a credit card, next week I will have some codes that we will give away. I was going to do it this week, but I just didn't have enough time to set something up. So I'll get something set up for next week so that we can announce how to do it on the show. So we'll run a little contest. I think I have two codes so far. I might get more than that.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to snag a couple as well. So hopefully we'll have a handful and people who need them can get them that way. But I do want to point out for those of you who have not gone to the trouble of setting up your Twitch Prime trial or whatever at this point, you only have until November the 5th. Now, it remains to be seen if perhaps Blizzard will introduce an alternate way to get Turand down the road, although they didn't with Khadgar. It was a time-limited right. thing as well. So right now, the Turand promotion for signing up for Twitch Prime says it expires on November the 5th, which is the start of BlizzCon. So you basically have from now until BlizzCon to sign up and get Turand in-game, and we would strongly encourage you to do that. I know even the Twitch streamers who were at TwitchCon have said there are some of them. Savitz tweeted that he got something like 100 new subscribers out of nowhere, despite the fact that he wasn't streaming all weekend because people signed up and had this free subscription they could give to somebody. So it's been a really positive thing in the yep. community.
Yep, that it has been.
Anything else on Turand?
I think we should move on to the big news of the week.
All right, the big news of the week. So I am very, very happy to be able to talk about this. Blizzard came out this week with a set of balance changes. We didn't have really any public-facing clues that this was going to occur up until very recently. And then on the 28th, earlier this week, they came out with a post detailing seven cards they've changed.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, 7 major balance changes to cards that they felt were having an adverse effect on the overall state of the game. So we're going to go through all of them, but there's a couple things I want to say before we do that. Number one, this is super good for the game. And it's really nice to see that Blizzard has stepped in and decided to address this now, rather than some people had been positing that they might just wait for the next standard rotation to take care of some things. Like, they finally had to step in and do something, and they made that choice. So kudos to them for that. Above and beyond that, I do want to say that I think there's kind of a pattern starting to emerge where it looks like they might do this every year in the lead up to BlizzCon. Because this is now a couple of times in a row they've sat back, watched how things played out, and then in the month or so leading up to BlizzCon, turned around and said, no, hold the phone. We need to fix this. And it's a good time of year because it doesn't impact much in the way of tournaments. And everybody has, you know, that 3-4 weeks leading up to BlizzCon to play in the well-established meta after the balance changes. So that, in addition, I think has been very positive. JR, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with your thoughts. I wanted to tack on two more, though, is that we're seeing four of the seven cards coming from the Classic Basic set, which tells me that the whole idea of Standard being on a rotation and keeping these cards in play through the entirety of Hearthstone may not be the best idea that Blizzard has had. I really think they need to come up with something new in that regard when they rotate things out, because it's pretty obvious that if they keep changing these Classic and Basic cards, which brings me to my second point of I don't know. Like, Wild just takes a hit again. Like, I wanted to play Wild this week. In fact, I started to the other day. And it's just like all of the, I want to play all of the old decks that I used to enjoy, but I can't because they're going to continuously keep nerfing the Classic and Basic cards that I use to create those decks. So I don't know. It's good for the game right now and for competitive play. I just feel like Wild is just taking another hit, though.
And I'll give you that. I mean, I know that there's a lot of people who, if Wild is their preferred way of playing, or even if it's just how they go complete some quests when they need to win games with certain classes or whatever, it's starting to look like the Wild experience is always going to be quite narrow because there's not going to be ever anything that survives a Standard rotation and makes it back to Wild intact in terms of anything combo driven or anything that, you know, really, really sets it apart from that sort of Standard minion per turn tempo based style of play. And unfortunately, even in Wild, most of the decks that are succeeding have that sort of same feel to them. You just put something on the board and trade every turn until one player or the other gets some kind of game ending bomb they can throw down. But it's something that hopefully will change over time, because hopefully Blizzard will introduce new and different cards that interact in different ways. Like, we've only had one cycle in Standard. Next year's Standard is going to be different because they're going to be able to introduce new cards that they don't have to worry about whether they would have positive or negative interactions with cards from Blackrock Mountain, cards from League of Explorers. Like, they can take a look and say, okay, if this card and this card were both in play at the same time, you know, if there was a card that maybe dealt damage to your opponent for the amount that you healed for, you couldn't have that in Standard at the same time as Reno, because that would be really, really bad. But they can print that card now because it won't be playing with Reno, and then Wild has this crazy combo that doesn't exist and never existed in Standard. So it might be the sort of thing that changes over time. But I digress. We got some serious balance changes to talk through. So we're just going to start from the top, work our way down. Number one, Blizzard is taking a real serious swing at Shaman. And the first card they changed is Rockbiter Weapon. So Rockbiter Weapon right now today reads, it's a one mana spell that says give a friendly character +3 attack this turn. The balance change, increasing the cost of that spell to 2 mana, which is a big change. This takes Rockbiter from being one of the most efficient early game removal spells in the game and very easy to combo with a series of other weapons or Divine Shield minions, and makes it something that has, frankly, the same cost as a Fiery War Axe for a single swing. JR, thoughts?
Yeah, no, the biggest change to this will be the turn one, I can't Rockbiter Weapon and kill your dude anymore, unless I have coin and want to use that to do it. That's the biggest thing in my opinion. The other big thing is if I wanted to, like, turn five or turn seven, lay down a Doom Hammer and then double Rockbiter or something like that. I can't do that anymore. I can no longer play Alakir and double Rockbiter. Instead, I can just do it once on that one turn. So there are some pretty significant changes to that. I still think the biggest one is the early game tempo swing with it. where I can no longer turn one, kill your dude. It puts it in the same boat as Fiery Wind, War Axe. I almost said Wind Axe. Fiery Wind Axe, sure. It puts it in the same boat as that, just not as powerful, obviously, since that's a weapon and this is a spell.
Right. And I think this is actually honestly really good for the game, because right now, if you look at early game Shaman, there are so many ways to have good, efficient removal. You've got things like Spirit Claws, and you can get spell damage and reliably make that into a 3-2 or a 3-attack, 3-durability weapon, right? For one cost. You've got Lightning Bolt on turn one available to you if you need to clear a 3-health or a 3-durability body, right? Rockbiter.
But those come with Overload. Well, Spirit Claw doesn't. But...
sure. But I mean, I think that's intentional. Like, I think there should always be this push-pull for Shaman in particular to drive you to play with Overload, right? To force you to think about, should Lava Shock or Eternal Sentinel be in my deck? Am I prepared to take a hit to get a really efficient turn now and have a less efficient follow-up turn? Like, that's a big part of Shaman's identity, or it should be. That's how the game was designed and one of the core mechanics for the class. And Rockbiter has always been better in that sense. It's always been easier to combo. It's got all these synergies with Wind Fury and Divine Shield. And all of a sudden, it's like, you know what? Now, because it has all those synergies, you have to actually account for it being a little more expensive and make some trade-off decisions. Am I prepared to wait a turn to get that value out of an Argent Squire, or to pair it up with a Wind Fury minion or a Wind Fury weapon? And it really frees Blizzard up, I think, to do a lot more with early game Shaman without it being quite so oppressive, because they say very, very openly in this post that they also looked at things like Trog and Totem Golem and said, you know what, those are going to rotate and we want to be able to solve this problem long term, not just nerf a card that's going to go away in 4 months and continue to have the Rockbiter issue forever. So I think this is really good, honestly. Like, it really does feel like they're trying to give players a choice rather than it being an auto include. And that's always been where they end up going, is which cards are auto includes and can we fix that?
Yeah, and I think it's still going to see play. Maybe not as much, and maybe not in every single deck.
Right, there's still really good synergies.
Maybe it's a one of.
But yeah, maybe it's like, you run it as a one of, or you need to consider using it just as removal and not holding onto it for a Doomhammer combo or something. But yeah, I think it's really good. Do you want to go through this next one?
Yeah, so the next one also hit Shaman pretty hard, but not as hard in the long term for Shaman. Maybe just here in the next 6 months or so. And that is Tuskar Totemic. It's staying the same cost and everything, but the battle cry is changing from summon any random totem to just summon a randomly basic totem, which is what the card should have been to begin with, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, so, I was surprised that it was any totem when it was originally printed, because at the time it could pull Vitality Totem, it could pull Totem Golem, it could pull Mana Tide, right? It could do all these things.
Right.
And then on top of that, in Karazhan, they printed Wicked Witch Doctor and very explicitly said a basic totem. And it really seemed odd to me that they would make one, frankly, the weaker of those two cards, because Wicked Witch Doctor is probably the weaker of the two, pull only basic totems, whereas Tuskar Totemic could pull any totem. That always seemed like, as soon as they printed that card, you knew something was wrong with Tuskar Totemic.
Right. And that's the biggest thing with it, is basically on turn three, you had a very high percentage chance to basically get Totem Golem. And then you have a 6-6 on turn three, 6-6 stats on turn three.
Yeah, basically. Which was always way too powerful. And frankly, I mean, mid-range Shaman got away for a long time without including Mana Tide, and you could roll into Mana Tide on your Tuskar Totemic and solve that problem, because now your opponent, who is trying to weigh what they should remove, maybe they've got a Fiery War Axe equipped. They've got to look at it and say, do I deal with the damage threat, or do I deal with the draw? Because you need to limit draw for Shaman, who generally doesn't run a lot of draw. Like, it was always way too powerful, and there were too many good things that could happen. Even pulling something like a Flame Tongue, like how you played the card was positioning it to try and roll Flame Tongue, hoping you rolled Mana Tide or Totem Golem, and then if you got, you know, Healing Stream or Wrath of Air, you still felt okay. And that was the thing, is that the results are still good. All of the synergies with Draenei Totem Carver and Thing from Below and everything else, they're all still there. You just don't get the oppressive, vastly overpowered results. And that's how it probably should have been printed in the first place.
Right. Right. So this card, I'm not sure if this card is going to still continue to see play. It might, maybe, but I would imagine probably not at this point. I think this is might be the end of seeing Teskar Totemic in these decks.
It's hard to say, right? Like, it still feels like it's a really good turn three play, especially if you're running a deck that uses a lot of totem synergies.
But I'd rather just run Frostwolves at that point, I think.
Well, and this is the thing, right? Is again, I think it pushes Shaman back in the direction of considering their overload cards. And I think it also opens up the three drop tech slot. Because if you think about it, a lot of the really, really tech specific cards, right? Your mind control techs and your blood knights and stuff fall on three, and Shaman just hasn't been considering them because they've got such a good, reliable set of three.
Because it doesn't matter for them.
No, it doesn't help them. Like, why would you run Blood Knight and try to deal with all of the people who are running Argent Squire when you're actually going to do it more efficiently with Totem Golems coming out of your Teskar Totemics? Like, it's a good change. And it was this was one of the ones where we had sort of said, like, we're worried that maybe they're just going to wait and let it rotate out. Because Teskar Totemic and Totem Golem and Tunnel Trog are all going away, right? They're all leaving Standard in the spring. So it kind of looked like maybe they're just going to let it die that way. But they stepped in and dealt with it this time. So
they stepped in and dealt with it before the championship because they want to see. I think the biggest thing to take away from this is they want to see a more diverse lineup going into BlizzCon.
Right. And this maybe
Shaman taking a hit will do that.
Yeah, this maybe forces people to consider what those options are. And frankly, we're not going to talk meta this week, but I know that the Vicious Syndicate report said that, like, mid-range Shaman is actually up in representation somehow from last week. Like, there's even more people playing Shaman on ladders. So it was getting to a point where I think now people are playing it because they know it's overpowered because all these cards are about to get nerfed. But so next one on the list, also a card that has been very popular, is Call of the Wild in Hunter. Call of the Wild is an 8 mana spell that reads summon all three animal companions. So you get a Leok, a Misha, and a Huffer. In the patch that's coming out later this coming week, Call of the Wild will change to 9 mana cost. JR, weigh in on this for me.
I believe, if I remember correctly, I said this at the very beginning when we first did like card reviews for this, that this card is crazy. It's nuts. And it just didn't, it felt like it cost too little for what you get. And then I played against it and I'm like, this card is dumb for being 8 mana. It needs to be like 9 or more because it's ridiculous, on what it can do, because you had to beat a hunter by turn 8 or turn 7, depending on if they had coin. Then get to deal with back-to-back Call of the Wild. Or it needed to be like a legendary, like the first legendary spell. That would have been kind of cool. And you could only have one. But the fact that you could play it, like if you had coin, you could play it on turn 7 or without coin turn 8 and then play another one turn 9. It was very tough to deal with against Hunter. It was a lot of power for that kind of cost. So to see it go up to turn 9 at this point, and then you'll get a deal with it turn 9 and 10. It gives you that extra turn to finish off the Hunter, which a lot of times is kind of what you needed, though.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think this is going to be kind of a wash, to be honest. I remember actually thinking that 8 mana was a good cost for this spell because I was really pleased that they had done things like this and like Flame Wreathed Faceless, right? Where they finally printed an overload card where it was actually worth more mana than its total cost across the 4 mana upfront cost and the 2 mana overload. You were still actually getting a net benefit. And this was the same way. I loved that Hunter was getting something where you pay 8 and you're getting easily 9, if not more, in value. If you add up all of the health and damage and effects, despite the fact that they're across 3 bodies and, you know, vulnerable to Flame Strike or whatever, you're getting a ton of value. You're still going to get a ton of value. But I was really glad that they were trying to print some cards that made people feel like you got something out of playing them, right? And they weren't just an on-curve option. They were like a new way to get ahead or a new style of synergy. But Call of the Wild was nuts. I mean,
yeah.
I wasn't even really worried about the you take 5 damage from a Huffer on turn 8. It was the fact that you reliably got a charge minion that could clear something, a taunt that would protect you, and then Leok, and that one damage on all your minions, that's what made it so scary, because you could never allow a hunter to have anything on the board
right.
going into turn 8. That's what made it so gross. So
yeah, and then the fact that Hunter has so many good options like mid-game, especially with Savannah High Main, which is one of the best cards, if
still
not the best card in
yeah.
the game. You know, you play that beforehand, and it's very difficult to deal with Savannah High Main, and you won't be able to completely deal with it and then before Call of the Wild pops off.
Right, and there's you'll have, a ton yeah. of scary synergy, too. Like, you're talking about the one deck that still has the potential to have multiple charge minions, because you can play Call of the Wild behind a Tundra Rhino. You can right. have all of these things that come together and just do a ton of damage and are kind of gross, frankly. And Hunter is the only class where that kind of stuff is still truthfully possible. Honestly, though, like, I think it's still going to see a ton of play on 9 mana. I think all this does yeah. is make it so that hunters will go back and they'll add a Ragnaros, or they'll add a Medivh or something. The one thing I will say is I actually hope that this makes hunter players go back and seriously reconsider King Crush, because I think that's always been designed to be one of the big late game finisher plays for hunter. Mm. And putting King Crush up against Call of the Wild for 8 mana was a no-brainer. You just run Call of the Wild instead. Now it's like, maybe that 8-8 with charge in the late game isn't so bad after all. That's a lot of face damage. It's easily going to go 2-for-1 because it's got charge and you can decide how to use it on that first turn. So again, like, I think they're just trying to make players go back and make choices, not just say, well, Call of the Wild is so good, I can't not run it.
Yeah. And you're still gonna see this.
Oh, it's not going anywhere. It yeah. might become, again, like a one of, like Rockbiter. You may not want two Calls of the Wild, because it's, if you end up with 2 9 mana spells in your hand, that's kind of actually a dead card.
Right.
All right. Talk me through this next one.
Yeah, so the next one, Warrior. This is the one that sort of surprised. Actually, the next one is what really surprised me. It shouldn't have, but it did. But this is the one that sort of surprised me to see. And Warrior's Execute took a hit. It went from 1 mana to 2 mana. So once again, we're seeing that, you know, you can't, you know, play your big spell and then for 1 mana, kill your opponent's big minion along with it. Now you've got to make your mana a little bit more efficient in a way if you want to deal with something. So this just makes it a little bit, gives you more choices, I guess, which is kind of the theme of these balance changes on what you want to play. You're obviously still going to see 2 executes in every single Warrior deck, I believe, because this is the best card removal in the game, basically, or at least one of the best card removal in the game. So you're still, and at 2 mana, it's still, I mean, you can deal with, you know, any damaged minion. It doesn't matter if it's a 30-30 and it's taken 1 damage, you can kill it. So this is still going to see play. It's still a big change, and one that surprised me just for the fact I didn't feel that Execute was really that much of a problem. So what do you think about this?
I will actually say this is probably, of the changes, I think it's good, but I think it's the one that I like the least, because in my mind, right, Execute already cost a minimum of 2 mana, because you had to do something right. to activate it. Now, that something could be attack with a weapon charge, or trade a minion, or cast a spell, but there was no way for you to just use a 1 mana removal, right? It wasn't like using Shield Slam, or any of the other really, really cheap removal spells. It was always going to cost you 1, plus whatever it took to activate it. So it had a multiple card or multiple mana cost already. That said, this is still probably going to be fine in most of the late game control style Warriors, where you're floating a ton of extra resources and mana into the late game anyway. It mostly matters in the tempo style decks, where all of a sudden you don't get the super, super efficient, I'm going to, you know, Ravaging Ghoul and Execute on turn 4 as an answer to a Flame Rage right. Faceless. Like, all it does is take the tempo value of the spell down 1 notch, push it back 1 turn. And that, frankly, is fine. Like, I think this is a good, healthy change. And it also, maybe, right, a lot of the theme behind some of these changes is it opens up some design space. So when Tuskar Totemic can't roll any totem, now if they want to, they can print a 4 mana totem, right? They have that option, then they didn't have that option before. With Execute costing 2, maybe that gives them room to have more things that could activate it, more whirlwind effects, or more things that benefit from whirlwind effects, but they don't want you to be able to lay down a patron and hit two whirlwind effects and still have that 1 point of mana left to throw an execute down.
Yeah,
that's that kind of stuff to me makes a lot of sense. And it also maybe means that they've got plans for more cost manipulation effects down the road, right? Execute at one meant that if it ever got any kind of cost reduction, it was just zero. Whereas now at two, it gets reduced to one. And I think that's really a good change as well, because it means that you're not so scared of Warrior getting a single Thoris on tick, which is, funnily enough, very similar to this next card we're going to talk about. So they changed Charge, the Warrior spell Charge. Charge used to read for 3 mana that you could give a friendly minion plus 2 attack and the charge mechanic. Today, now, when it changes, it's going to read as a 1 mana spell, give a friendly minion charge, it can't attack heroes this turn. So this, I think you were right, JR, this was probably the one that came the most out of left field, but it makes a lot of sense. Charge is the one mechanic they just don't like, and I maintain that if they could go back and start over from the beginning, things like charge and silence wouldn't end up in the game. You wouldn't have charge hardly at all. It'd be unique to things like maybe Grom and Alec here and stuff, where it's very specifically on a handful of late game legendaries. It just wouldn't be a core mechanic. And this spell has always stuck out as the one thing that enabled a ton of really messy OTK combos and stuff that just wasn't fun to play against, right? Playing with it was great because you got to pull off these crazy combinations and set up enormous turns like old patron used to be, but it never was enjoyable to be playing against it and realize that you basically have to kill this person or you're dead because there's nothing you can possibly do to survive their absurd combo. So I actually really like this.
Yeah, I feel like this was a preemptive nerf.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this for sure screams we want to be able to print, you know, stuff that has, you know, maybe it's more neutral Wind Fury minions. Maybe it's, who knows? It could be anything. But it opens up a lot of space, and it feels very similar to things like Fool's Bane that just came out in Karazhan, where they really want to give Warrior lots of ways to manipulate the board, right? They got tons of removal, tons of weapons, tons of interactions that look really cool on paper because of that. But when it could go face, it just represented this awful, awful mechanic that everybody was going to try and abuse to set up one turn kills. And I would be willing to bet that with this change, there isn't a single viable one turn kill left in the game.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. I'm trying to think of any off the top of my head, but because the biggest thing with the one turn kills is being able to use spells such as this, or some kind of mechanic that gives your other creatures charge and bonuses to them. I can't think of any other spells that off the top of my head that would allow you to do that. I might be wrong.
I mean, there's always been stuff that did kind of similar things over two turns, right? Freeze Mage was built that way. Malagos Freeze Mage was built that way. Malagos Druid kind of works that way. But they've always involved sticking something on the board and then playing, or being able to do like 18 damage in a turn using, you know, Leeroy and Faceless and stuff like this. And frankly, if you save up all game to put together a combo to deal 18 damage, like, more power to you, you deserve to deal 18 damage. But being able to kill someone outright in a single turn was a problem. And this, I think, was the enabler that enabled the last possible variant of that.
Yeah. Yep. So the next one that we had, this one surprised me a little bit too, but not as much, because it's a pretty powerful card, and you've been seeing it since basically day one of Hearthstone, and that is Abusive Sergeant. Abusive Sergeant, just still the one mana cost, still gives a battle cry of give a minion plus 2 attack this turn. He is no longer a 2/1. He is now a 1/1. And I think the biggest reason they did this is it puts it in more in line with Leper Gnome, which was also a 2/1. It was a big problem early game. Did 2 more damage than he needed. I think this just slows down aggro decks a little bit more. I think you're still going to see it in play, maybe a 1/1 once again instead of a 2/2. Maybe it gets removed altogether, sort of like Leper Gnome.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing with this, the biggest thing the Abusive Sergeant did is you already had a minion on board. You'd play the plus two to give it to be able to attack, and you still have a 2/1 that they have to deal with. And unless you were a warrior or something with AoE or a mage or something like that, you're probably taking 2 more damage on top of that. Now you don't have to worry about that as much.
Well, see, I think this change is good for a couple of reasons, right? One, it definitely needed the Leper Gnome treatment, and frankly, it stuck out real bad that Abusive Sergeant stayed at a 2/1 when Leper Gnome dropped, because it has functionally the same effect, but reversed. Instead of waiting for the death rattle, you can actually use it offensively as a battle cry. And they made the exact same style of change. They left the death rattle intact on Leper Gnome and changed the stat line. On Abusive Sergeant, they're leaving the battle cry intact, but changing the stat line. This makes playing a tempo Abusive Sergeant on turn one awful. It means that you still get all the battle cry synergies, right? You can use it with Bran Bronzebeard. You can trigger, Rumbling Elemental. Like, there's all the things that still work as far as the battle cry is concerned, but it doesn't make it an oppressive minion that, absolutely, you're right, was in every aggro deck. And I think that was the problem, is if you go through and you design a fast deck in any class, right? Hunter, Warlock, Druid, every single one of them ran this card. And Leper Gnome used to be exactly the same way. I haven't seen a Leper Gnome played since they changed it. And
I play it in my Warlock deck.
Okay, well, you are that one person. And you can also run now the 1/1 Abusive Sergeants and be the guy who runs these two. I don't think this card is going to see play anymore, because the Battle Cry is good and it allows you to trade up and it does all sorts of great things. But there's so many other comparable or better ways to get this effect that I don't think you would bother. A 1/1 for one that gives something plus two, like, really, truly, are you going to run this instead of Direwolf Alpha? Are you going to run this instead of Shattered Sun Cleric, instead of Dark Iron Dwarf, instead of Defender of Argus? Like, it had the value of being too good because it was a one mana minion that traded up. And one mana minions that trade up, there are very few of them left in the game, at least without some kind of synergy. It's one thing to have a class minion like a Mana Worm that can do that, but having a neutral that trades up into a 2 or sometimes a 3 drop, like, no, you can't.
I think you might see it depending on, I think you still might see it possibly in Zoo, maybe, depending on what else they're putting in. Just for the fact, especially if they play with Argent Squire, because that's where I think this card really shine was, in conjunction with Argent Squire and still having that Divine Shield and being able to trade up. That one extra damage that it could do might end up taking it out. So I do agree with you a bit on that. I still think we're going to see it from time to time, though, just like Leper Gnome, which I still play with.
I think it's going to be played a lot less, which I'm really happy with.
Yeah.
Do we get to do the pièce de résistance now?
The what?
You heard what I said. So the last card on the list, number 7 of 7, the card that everybody loves to hate and hates to love, Yogg-Saron, Hope's End. I think this is a card that everybody in some way or another has been waiting for Blizzard to do something about, because statistically it was not only that it was too good, but it was a card that people felt was mandatory because of the nature of its interaction with other cards in the game. And I know a lot of people are saying that they really loved Yogg, that it was their favorite card, it was the reason they played. Blizzard even came out and said that this is the single most crafted legendary from the Old Gods set, which frankly blows me away. But they want it to still be fun and have the same effect it has now without being a mandatory inclusion at the highest level of play, because it was so reliable. And that was the problem with it, was it was so reliable. So the card's text hasn't changed at all. 10 mana, 7/5 with a battle cry that reads, cast a random spell for each spell you've cast this game. Targets chosen randomly, but Yogg-Saron will stop casting those spells if it is destroyed, silenced, transformed, or returned to its owner's hand. So if at any point Yogg-Saron becomes Frog-Saron, if Yogg-Saron casts Vanish, if Yogg-Saron polymorphs himself, that will be when the spell casting stops. So your 15-spell Yogg-Saron might cast 3 spells and then fizzle.
Yeah. It always surprised me a little bit that wasn't the case to begin with. Because if you remember Sylvanas' interaction, if Sylvanas took control of Yogg-Saron, Yogg-Saron would start casting spells for your opponent as soon as it got taken over. So it really surprised me the first few times I saw it played that it didn't do that. Like when it got returned or when it got polymorphed or anything like that, that it just continued to cast spells. So it didn't make a lot of sense that it did that. So I'm happy that this is the direction that Blizzard wanted to go with this card. And the reason I say that is I didn't want to see Yogg-Saron get completely nerfed to the point where it would not ever see play. Now, I don't think it fully belongs in competitive play. And that's why one of the reasons why I said a couple weeks ago that, you know, I think Blizzard, the esports team, should have like a ban list or something from competitive play that is, you know, something that for their tournament, like you can't play X number of cards right now. And then, you know, they would just dictate that. And I still think that is the direction that they really need to go, because I don't think it is the Team 5's, the developers' decision for that. I think they still need to make cards like this for the fact that Hearthstone is a casual, fun game, and Yogg-Saron was really fun to play. I really enjoyed it. It's still one of my top favorite cards. And I know that John and Kevin both completely don't agree with me on any of this, and that's okay, but this is how I feel about this specific card. I remember saying that it was going to be a good card, but I didn't think it would see competitive play because I thought it would punish you too much, and then we played it and found out it hardly ever punished you because Yogg-Saron did a lot of things really, really well. It would clear the board, it would draw you cards, and it would give you secrets. And at this point now, when it clears the board, a lot of times it clears itself. And when it does that, you don't get the rest of the effects. So this card will likely not see as much play anymore. It would likely not see competitive play anymore. You'll still see it in ladder because people are going to play with it because it's a fun card. And I'm still going to play it for that exact reason.
So we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one then. I think that, okay, number one, I don't think they can ever really introduce a ban list, at least not today with the way that the Hearthstone Championship Tour works, where the primary vessel for people to qualify to play in tournaments is on ladder. And it would be very awkward for you to play with one set of cards to qualify to play competitively and then have to learn different cards in a different meta to play in the Hearthstone Championship Tour or a tournament setting. So that, I think they want the game to be consistent. And frankly, this is something they've done in most of their games. If you go back to StarCraft, right? Like they made it so that I, as a player, play on the same maps as the pros are playing on at the same time. They do want that consistent experience between your personal play at home and what the esport looks like when you watch it on stream.
No, I'm 100% with you on that. I for that exact reason, I don't see them doing it. It's just, I feel like they should, but it'll never happen.
Sure. I don't disagree that they could choose to do that as a short-term solution instead of something like this, or leaving Yogg-Saron in the state it's been in for the last 6 months. They could have said, all right, no Yogg in tournaments from April to October and then solved it now. But whatever, regardless, they've done something that fixes the problem. I think this card in a lot of ways represents a lot of the things that are wrong with Hearthstone. I think this card has always been way too high variance. And frankly, the variance level of a card should be something that's fun and interesting and that sometimes works for you, sometimes doesn't, right? We've talked about this in the past about Ragnaros. You know, I can remember when the YOLO rag to win a game was considered too high variance, and now most people accept that that's just a part of the game. Sylvanas randomly mind-controlling the right thing on your opponent's board was too high variance, and now we love that, and that's something that actually feels like it's reliably a part of the core game. This was off the deep end. Like, statistically, this was actually a better Deathwing and made Deathwing unplayable. And that seemed kind of insane. And it also is nice that they're changing this card and not just stuffing it in wild and forgetting about it, or not trying to solve some of the other interactions. Because this, to me, it's the same problem as Rockbiter, right? With Rockbiter, they could have changed a bunch of Windfury cards and a bunch of weapons. They could have changed a whole bunch of the problem interactions. But instead, they just looked at it and said, if we just make Rockbiter more expensive, the problem goes away. If they just change Yogg-Saron, what is the appeal now in running an all-spell deck? Like, there just isn't one, right? You're still going to see token druid that uses arcane giants. You're still going to see people try to make Malagos druid work. You're still going to see people run Miracle Rogue and things that use lots of spells. But Yogg isn't going to be this table-flipping, insane, high-variance thing that you just stuff in the end of there because you're running a deck with a lot of spells.
Unless for me, because I'm still going to play it.
And that's okay. Like, that part of it I get. If people want to mess around with it or they enjoy the concept and they want to play with it on ladder, there's still going to be insane YOLO Yoggs that happen in the late game that cast 20 spells that are all positive. Like, that is still an outcome that is possible. But the variance is not going to be so narrow in its... it's a high variance card with a low variance result. Now the result is high variance as well, and that takes it out of the limelight for competitive. If you're a competitive player and you're going to get on stage at BlizzCon, you're looking at what this card could do, and you're saying, if I cast this, or I play this minion, and the first thing it does is hex itself, I lose the game. And that's such a huge gamble that before you at least knew that it was going to do 17 things and maybe help you in some way. Maybe it hexes itself, but you get an ice block or whatever. Now it's just not reliable enough. And I think that will be a really good, smart change. So I'm really happy with this change.
I am too, from the flip side, where I didn't want to see this card nerfed to the point where no one would ever play it again, because it's a card that I really enjoy. And I wanted to continue to enjoy that card. So I think the effect the change that they made to it was very fair in a way that it takes away the competitive part of it and, removes that completely and still allows, people like me that still want to play around with the card and see what it does and go, oh, shoot, I got hexed. Well, shoot, I lost the game. Oh, well. But it's, I did something awesome. I still get that. And I'm really glad that of all of the changes that they have done to cards in the past, I think this is one of the best ones. It's a very medium, it's still going to see play, but it's going to remove itself from competitive play and people can still enjoy the card.
And you know what? I think that's something we can say about all of these changes. Like we were happy, I think, in some respects and not happy in others with things like the change to Warsong Commander. We talked a lot about, the fact that Battle Rage was still a problem or that Frothing Berserker was still a problem. We made comments on some of the other interactions we weren't happy about, and they nerfed Warsong Commander from interesting into actually unusable. That card is worse than playing nothing in most circumstances. Right. Yogg, they just said we need to just tune the dial ever so slightly. Make it so that, the signal to noise ratio on this card is a little different. And I'm very happy with that because it is still a 10 mana minion. If you put this in your deck and you build a deck to support it, it should still feel like it's reasonably high impact. It just shouldn't feel like it's mandatory. And that's what all of these changes look like to me, is these cards in the decks they were being played in were totally mandatory. And they've now made it so that you won't run charge in an OTK style deck. You won't necessarily put execute in a tempo warrior. You won't use Call of the Wild in every single hunter deck, no matter what. Like, there's going to be times and places for it. Like, you would put two Call of the Wild in a face hunter deck. Honestly, you would, because it was that good. You couldn't afford not to have it available to you. These are all changes that feel, I think, level even. Like, there's nothing heavy handed about them. I will go on record as saying this is the best balance update I've ever seen Blizzard make.
I would have to probably agree with that, to be honest. Like, of everything the only card I think that really takes out is Tuskar Totemic. Like, but that one needed to happen, regardless, anyway, because it was just way overpowered for what it was. But every other change, like, I'm just like, I can still play with this card. I can still play with this card. I can still use this card. The only one that's out of left field was Charge. I never played with it anyway, so it doesn't really affect me at all. But of everything else, it's like, I would still absolutely, play with these cards. And I was afraid that if Blizzard did anything like this, they would you know, just make the cards completely unplayable again. And that would have, especially in Yogg-Saron's case, I think that would have really been unfortunate.
Right. And you've got enough examples. Like, you can just go back down the list. You can look at Warsong Commander. You can look at Starving Buzzard. There's all these cards that went from, like, awesome
Headcrack.
To awful. Yeah. And then there's cards where they changed them. And just power creep has sort of solved that, right? Nobody plays Shattered Sun Cleric because it's just not quite good enough. You see the occasional Dark Iron Dwarf, but not many. They just tweaked things in that way that sort of said, like, we don't want these cards to be so good that you don't try the new cards. And that was fair. I felt those were fine. But these changes are the best changes I think they've ever made.
All right. I agree.
So before we move on from this topic entirely, we did want to touch on one sort of minor thing. Blizzard hasn't had a phenomenal track record of communicating the logic behind these changes or telling us how they arrived at their decisions. But Dean Ayala did make a couple of posts kind of explaining their viewpoint on these changes. And he did say that, you know, they feel bad about things like the timing of the IGN interview relative to this coming out, where, you know, last week on the show, we were talking about an interview where they said everything was on their radar and then poof, suddenly massive changes here, like effectively 3 days later. That just was a timing problem for them with when the interview was conducted, when the article was published, when the changes came out. And I mean, it's still a little bit like, yeah, okay, you probably knew you were going to make changes when you talked to them and you didn't really communicate that well, but so be it. I mean, that's a fair explanation. And they actually went into
these changes weren't made in 24 hours, you know, in one conversation.
No, this has been something that they've talked about for a long time. Yeah. But they also went on then to say there were other cards they looked at. So, and then the specific examples they cite were in the case of Shaman. They said that there were five cards, six cards, Rockbiter, Trog, Totem Golem, Thing from Below, Tuskar Totemic, and Doomhammer, that were all cards that they had put on the table and said, would changing one of these kind of solve the problem? And they said that in particular, they were actually very close to changing Tunnel Trog, but they decided that there are already a number of Shaman decks that don't use it, and it is going to rotate, whereas Rockbiter kind of has a limitation on their design space because it's in the classic set, is in every deck, and is more significant. Ditto with Tuskar, where they said outright, it was the most clear offender for both power level and fun.
Yep.
So I was just really glad that they came out and said something.
Like, I was surprised Doomhammer wasn't included, but at the same time, you saw Rockbiter in almost every single Shaman deck, and Doomhammer was one of those that you didn't see in every single Shaman deck. You do sometimes, and then things will rotate out, and then people start playing Harrison Jones, and you get really punished if you have Doomhammer at that point. And you see it kind of rotate back and forth, but where Doomhammer really shined was in conjunction with Rockbiter. So going ahead and making that change to Rockbiter will probably make Doomhammer less good as well.
Right.
By doing it that way instead of nerfing them both.
And Doomhammer, like you say, kind of has some counters already. And there's that nice like tension between is Swamp Ooze or Harrison being played versus do I run Doomhammer? Doomhammer has the expense of if you use it for anything other than face damage, it's a huge liability to your own health pool. You don't now have the ability to easily buff it with Rockbiter. And there's still going to be other things, right? Like Doomhammer into Druid Hero Power using Finley, still very powerful. Doomhammer followed up by any card that buffs a weapon, still very powerful. Like, it's not like the card isn't going to be playable, whereas Rockbiter was such an enormous clear offender in terms of, like, you could play Rockbiter Doomhammer and be able to clear a 5/5 minion and still do 5 damage to face. Like, it was a problem. And I'm really glad that they're looking at all those interactions and picking the cards that are the problem cards, not just, well, which part of this could potentially do the most damage? It's Doomhammer, let's fix that.
Yep.
Cool. So we're not going to talk meta this week. I think we sort of hinted at that already. We're already an hour into the show and we haven't had a chance to even get there. B,
all Shaman.
Yeah, you can go find the Vicious Syndicate Data Reaper report for yourself. It's the same report as last week with slightly more Shaman.
It's going to change soon, so that'll be fun to talk about. But right now, same old, same old.
Yeah, I think it'll be actually a couple of weeks before we see the meaningful changes. But let's leave it at that for this week. You guys can check out the report. We'll link it in the show notes for you. Let's jump into some esports stuff.
Beta. or join us.
Yeah, so esports, we've got a couple of little updates, nothing enormous, but there were some kind of neat pieces that came out this week. Number one, it's kind of a minor quick thing, but Orange used to play for Team Archon before Team Archon sort of ceased to be a thing, has been signed by Alliance. Alliance, for those of you who don't follow esports real closely, is kind of the European wing of Evil Geniuses, one of the teams that's owned by GGA and thus by Twitch. So pretty big deal, and not a team that's really expressed interest in Hearthstone before. This is the only Hearthstone acquisition for Alliance, and there's no Hearthstone players on Evil Geniuses to this point. So it was kind of an interesting pickup in that respect. But nice to see Orange, you know, somebody who's a good player and a positive, I think, positive person in the scene, land kind of a good gig like this.
Yeah. You just like looked away and I'm like, yeah totally.
It's a good solid move for him. I think the organization still probably, I don't know how relevant Alliance is in the EU right now, but I'm glad that he has a team again.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where I think this is what you'll see a lot of teams do that aren't going to sign like five or six Hearthstone players. They're going to sign one, maybe two, and make them kind of, you know, you're our Hearthstone guy. And I think that's the way that Hearthstone's going to end up being at some point.
Yeah, I mean, part of me hopes that this signals that maybe Evil Geniuses will get involved and pick up some American players, or maybe we'll see more signings again, because a lot of teams have kind of shut down or gotten out of Hearthstone.
Right.
But individual pickups could still be a thing. So maybe you're right. Maybe that's the long-term outcome. Also in Hearthstone esports news, we have the final qualifier from one of the regional championships. So this last weekend was the Asia Pacific Summer Championship, the last of the regional championships outside of China, which we weren't tracking, but China is also done. And so we now know all of the seasonal winners. And Handsome Guy in particular is an interesting story because he played in all three seasonal championships, and not just like in the top eight. He was in the grand final of all three seasons.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He came in second to Dione in winter. He won in spring, and he won again in summer. Like, this is somebody who has put up incredibly consistent results. Now, I know there was some drama on Twitter when Frodan pointed out these numbers because there's a kind of a rule that people didn't know about in Asia Pacific where he is the highest point earner, got an automatic seed through the preliminary. He didn't have to play in the preliminary. He just got to go to top eight. But even still, I mean, to go second place in the first top eight, first place in the second top eight, first place in the third top eight across multiple different expansions and metas. Like, that's a level of consistency that's basically, it's better than what Tice did last year. It's right. Among the best we've ever seen.
I mean, basically at that point, you're playing, you know, the eight best players at that point of time in your region. And to go to the grand finals all three times and to win two of them is pretty crazy to think about. I mean, yeah, he may not have gotten there if he had to grind through the preliminaries, just because he might have lost a game or two along the way and not been able to get that far. But the fact he was able to do it is still a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at his results in the championships and go, okay, you know what? Yes, maybe he didn't have to play those six or seven rounds in the preliminary, but honestly, those results speak for themselves. It's not, especially in a high variance meta and with all the stuff that's been going on, you don't have results like that if you're not basically the best player in the world right now.
Yeah, and it will be very interesting to see how he does at BlizzCon. If he makes it really far, which if he does, that even solidifies it even more, in my opinion. Like, if he goes, you know, all the way at BlizzCon or even goes to the grand finals at BlizzCon, I think it, you know, tip of the hat to him on that. If he gets out early, though, at BlizzCon, then the naysayers may have a point.
Yeah, tough to say. So we do know all of the seasonal winners, like I said, in North America, or the Americas region, I guess, rather. Amnesiac, Sidonia, and Hot Meowth were the three winners. Asia Pacific was Dione, Handsome Guy twice. So the second one for summer will actually go to Yelsic, who is the player that he beat in the grand final. EU was Naaman, Tice, and Dr. Hippie. And we now know that China was Breath, Jason Zhu, and Omega Zero. So that's all 12 of the seasonal winners from all four regions for the whole year. And the last call events are going to run the next 2 weekends. So Europe and Asia Pacific's Last Call runs this upcoming weekend, and the America's Last Call runs October 15th. We don't have the specifics on China's Last Call, but it obviously will run in the same time period. It can't run before Europe and APAC because they'll want the balance changes in first. So it has to happen sometime in the next couple of weeks after that.
Yeah, and the biggest thing for me to take away from who is playing, you know, so far at BlizzCon, yeah, we've got these four last people that we don't know until Last Call. We see some names though that we saw last year, and even I believe one or two from even the previous year. I don't remember. Did Naaman go all 3 years? Or was it just last year?
No, he couldn't the 1 year because of the ban, I believe.
Right, but he would have been. But he would have been able to if it wasn't for that. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So with him, Tice, Amnesiac, you know, those are big names that we've seen for a couple of years now. So that's just leads to more credibility on that Hearthstone isn't this random number generator that you just win because you were able to roll better than someone else, that this is a game of skill. And there are some players out there that have proven time and time again that they are the best of the best. And there are several names on here that, you know, we see this year, we saw last year, and maybe we'll see next year.
Totally, I agree. So before we move on, out of that list, do you have any predictions? Anybody you think will do well when we get to BlizzCon? Even just people you think will make it out of BlizzCon opening week. Like, who do you think is going to be on stage in that top eight?
Out of EU, I think you're going to have Tice and Naaman. I believe they're going to make it out. I can't comment on China because I just don't know the players that well.
Totally.
But even that way with Asian Pacific, you've got to go with Handsome Guy just because the results that he's had. He will likely make it out of there as well. And then I'm going to have to say Sidonia and Amnesiac will probably advance from the Americas. If I was to give a final, and once again, like, we don't know what the, you know, we don't know what the brackets are going to be like or anything like that, so this can definitely change. I think Handsome Guy will have to be near the top because of his results. I think Tice will have to be near the top just because I feel like in the last 2 years, he's been one of, if not the best Hearthstone player in the game. You know, he made it to the semifinals last year. Or was it the finals? I don't remember.
No, he lost to Osaka in the semis. That was the one that everybody sort of said should have been the final. Yeah.
Yeah. It should have been the finals. So, you know, we'll see him. And I think, you know, even Naaman is, like, I've seen him play. He's just a really, really good player. And like I said, he's technically could have been there for 3 years in a row if it wasn't for that first year ban.
Totally. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting because I think we're going to see some very strong players skid through in Last Call yet, because you've got some big names that are yet to be officially on the list. But out of the people we know so far, I honestly think Hot Meowth will do really well because he's been playing a ton and had to work kind of uphill in the most difficult meta at one of the toughest times of year with all of these cards that are now going to be banned and rotate. I think you're going to see Tice and Handsome Guy both do very, very well because while their results may not be as recent, specifically in the case of Tice, they're players that stay very relevant. Tice has been at the top of the game for several years in a row, and I don't think you're going to see somebody sneak up on him unannounced. And
he was one that I picked last year to win it all.
And even after he lost, honestly, I mean, I think a lot of people said he was the best player of the year. He put up the best results of the year. He just didn't take home the last prize of the year. So, yeah, cool. Okay, well, I think that does it for esports news, hey?
Yep.
All right, then it is time for us to get out of here. Makes actually for a pretty decent show. We were lucky that we got some cool balance changes. Otherwise, we would have been sitting here talking about Shaman for another week. So,
which would have been awesome. We would have made talking about Shaman totally incredible.
Oh, absolutely. No question. That's we're good at that sort of thing. But it was nice to have some new things to talk about. So before we get out of here, we do want to again thank our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, and Coral. You guys are the best. Thank you so much. JR, talk to me about emails.
Yeah, so I think we had a couple emails, and I probably should have written them down. and then we could have talked about them.
Wow, with all the stuff we had on the list this week with balance stuff, like...
Yeah, I'm going to put them on for next week, and I believe we had a couple that we can very... We can answer next week. I'll talk to John about getting them on. So if you emailed us, we'll get to them. If you'd like to email us, it's over at wellmet@blizzpro.com.
Right on, yeah. And we do want those emails, guys, especially in these last couple of weeks leading up to BlizzCon. You guys are going to want to hear BlizzCon predictions. You're going to want to talk about the esports scene and what's coming for next year. Like, whatever it is that you want to hear, we want to know. So even if all you're doing is shooting us a message that says, hey, can you guys talk about X? Do that. Hit us up. Let us know. That feedback is invaluable. You can also tweet us at WellMetPodcast and let us know over there. Patreon news. We are in the process of doing a little bit of work on our Patreon. We're hoping to have maybe some new merchandise pretty soon here. Just lots of cool stuff going on. And we are going to make a real concerted push this month. So you guys who have been supporting us for a long time means the world to us. We don't have any new patrons to announce this week, but we're going to really ask that people, if you've been enjoying the show, if you want to help us crank out some new content, we're on the hunt to get back above that $400 milestone. We would love, love, love to be in a place where we can schedule a big bonus episode for when we get back from BlizzCon and be producing extra content as we start to approach our 2-year anniversary, 100 episodes. We got a lot of big milestones coming up, and the bonus episode we got to do with Disguised Toast was amazing. It was some of the best content I think we've ever done, and it would just be the best if we could do another one. So if you are ever at a point where you're considering supporting the show and you want to get in there, even if it's only for $1 or $2 a month, that makes a big difference over the thousands of people who listen to the show, right? It all adds up. So head over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast, check out the rewards, see what makes sense to you, and if you can get in there and support us, we will love you eternally.
Absolutely. And another way that you can help out the show, if you don't want to fork over any cash, it's a very free way of doing it, is heading over to iTunes and leaving a review on the show, preferably a 5-star review if you really, really like us. And if you're listening, I hope that you do. And for every 5-star review we get, we'll say your name on the show and thank you for giving that 5-star review. Unfortunately, this week we did not have any. But if you would like to give one, you can head over to iTunes, type in Hearthstone. You'll find Well Met there. Just click on it, leave a little 5-star review, and then next week I will mispronounce your name on the show, and it will be awesome.
Yeah, and that's a great way to help us get exposure to new people. So people who are out there looking for new content, who want to hear something about Hearthstone or something about a game, that's how they find us, is the better reviewed the show is, the earlier our episodes and our name shows up. And we're right up there, but every little bit counts, guys. So hit us with those reviews. It means a ton. JR, shout-outs for the week.
I just want to give a shout-out to all of our listeners and my followers on Twitter. You guys just helped me get over 900 in this past week, which was pretty cool for someone that doesn't tweet that much as these other guys. I was pretty happy to see that. Hopefully you will be following me a little bit more as I blog a little bit more about technology and programming and things like that, as I really want to push forward on the whole, you know, speaking thing at developers conferences this next year. And that's going to be kind of my big thing that I'm trying to do next year to improve myself. So looking forward to that, as well as working with these guys with BlizzPro and talking about Hearthstone and all these Blizzard games.
That's awesome, dude. I'm looking forward to that. That sounds like a lot of fun. For myself, a couple of things I mentioned earlier, but obviously we're trying to set up a BlizzPro BlizzCon meeting, and you can also come find John and I and some of the other BlizzPro folks over at World of Podcasts Con Before the Storm. We'll have the specifics for you, and we'll make sure you know kind of where we're going to be at. If you want to just find us and come hang out, get a selfie, get a shirt signed, whatever your jam is, make sure you're following us on Twitter. You can find John at Kick Tripod, JR at Eldorian, and myself at Lack of Realism. We'll make sure to get in touch and try to make sure that we're hanging out with as many people as we can while we're down there. As mentioned, obviously, going to be casting again, so I'm really hoping that as many of you as possible will tune in to that little TESPA tournament. It's just going to be the regional playoffs. It's not the grand finale, but it would mean the world to me to have some support in the chat, on the stream, And last but not least, I am going to be on Rally Point again. So Bleacher Report's esports podcast is doing their first ever live episode tomorrow night, Monday, October 3rd. Hopefully the show will be out by then and you guys will get that announcement. I know I talked about it last week, but would love to have some people come tune in and check that out as well. I got some cool feedback on my guest appearances on that show up to this point. So in general, guys, just stay in touch. Email us, tweet us. Get in touch and let us know what you love about the show, what you want to see done differently. It's just been a great time. We're 80 episodes in. This was episode 80, and that's crazy. Crazy.
Yeah. I have one more thing that I forgot about is now that BlizzCon's coming up, and you know, you guys want to talk to us, you want to meet us at BlizzCon or anything like that. I do have a BlizzCon text channel on our Discord server that, you know, we can access that on our phones. So if you want to, you know, hey, where are you guys at or something like that, head over to Discord and talk to us. Just join the Discord server over at discord.gg/BlizzPro. And if you're going to BlizzCon, that's a great way to be able to interact with us during the show.
All right. Well, that's going to do it then. We are going to get out of here. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Well Met. You can join us live every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific at twitch.tv/BlizzPro to get in on the conversation. And you can follow the show on Twitter at Well Met Podcast for additional news and updates. Well Met is exclusively supported by our fans. If you love the show, you can find out how to become a part of the family at patreon.com/WellMetPodcast. You can also find Well Met apparel at store.blizzpro.com. Definitely load up on shirts before BlizzCon, guys. I'm going to look for those shirts. And if anybody is wearing a Well Met shirt, I'm going to find you at BlizzCon because that'll be awesome. As always, a special thank you to Jake Buttonow for our theme music and Scythe Designs for his graphic contributions. This has been episode 80 of Well Met, and we'll see you again next week.
Well Met is a production of BlizzPro.com. The show records live at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at twitch.tv/BlizzPro. To get the latest news and information about the show, follow us on Twitter at Well Met Podcast or join us on our subreddit at reddit.com/r/WellMetPodcast. If you would like to support the show, you can find out how at patreon.com/WellMetPodcast.